The Monty Show on a Friday, March 23rd, 2018. How the heck are you? I'm Monty. That's Jake, loaded as always. Kyrie's going to have knee surgery. Mark Cuban. Should the NBA suspend Mark Cuban for the Mavs scandal? There's new stories coming out. Does Lonzo Ball ever develop into a star? 1 of 12 from 3 last night. 2 of 15 total. They lose by 3 to the Pelicans. YouTube banned guns, and there's a dead American family in Mexico. Happy Friday, everybody.
Good Friday to you.
Exactly right. But we today are going to encourage you to follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And without further ado, why don't we start with BYU football? Because Schlabaugh at ESPN wrote a really interesting piece that I found through my good friend Mitch Harper. Stud! All things BYU, make sure you find Mitch Harper, at Mitch underscore Harper, on Twitter. Mitch wrote a piece basically describing Schlabaugh's comments, and I want to read two paragraphs to you, two brief paragraphs about BYU football, and get your reaction, because I'm really passionate about this exact topic. Is BYU's schedule too hard? Are expectations too high? And I say without question, no, they're not. Mark Schlabaugh wrote, or said, quote, on Gunther and Ben on ESPN 700 in Salt Lake City, he said, Kalani needs to get a healthy quarterback and maybe Tanner Mangum can come back from an Achilles injury. But I just don't know how the guy has a chance with that schedule at Arizona, at Wisconsin, at Washington, at Boise, and at Utah in the Holy War to end the year. It's brutal. Schlabaugh continued on ESPN 700. If they're going to continue scheduling those types of games, I just don't know how BYU's administration, and here's the money, how BYU's administration can expect a guy to win 9 or 10 games a year. That hurts. Is he right? What are your thoughts on it?
I think his opinion is the public perception. I think if you don't follow BYU closely, if you are a casual observer of BYU, you might share his perception. But I think for an avid BYU fan, for the people who cover the team, I think people understand that they need a difficult schedule. They need nameplates on the schedule. Because to gain any ground, to even humor the idea of getting into the college football playoff, you need to have talent on that schedule. And I think when you play bigger names, it also helps with your recruiting. Guys want to play in the biggest games that they can possibly play in and get the most recognition.
At Arizona, here's the 2018 schedule. At Arizona, home for Cal. At Wisconsin, home for McNeese State. At Washington, home for Utah State, a rivalry game. Home for Hawaii, off on October 20th. Northern Illinois, at Provo. At Boise, at UMass. New Mexico State and Provo, and at Utah at Rice-Eccles. That's their schedule.
I don't know if that's tremendously difficult.
Oh, are you kidding me? I'm trying to find the outs in this schedule. Because it's not Arizona, Cal, Wisconsin. McNeese State's an out. At Washington, no. Utah State, that's always one of their most difficult games. Ask Taysom Hill how he feels about Utah State games. Hawaii, we'll see. That's always a great game. Northern Illinois, that's at home. You would expect them to win that.
Yeah.
At Boise on that blue, cruddy, terrible turf. At UMass, that's at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. New Mexico State at Lavelle. And then at Utah. There's what, three easy games on that schedule? And I say easy.
Yeah.
There's three lighter games on that schedule. Every other one of those, you're just getting your head kicked in every single snap. We've seen them against Wisconsin. We've seen them against Arizona. The Utah game on its own, I mean, how healthy are you going to be? Recently, they haven't been real healthy come October, November.
Right.
I mean, this schedule is really difficult, and that's just 2018, by the way. Oh, by the way, let's not forget what's on the line for BYU this year. More specifically, what's on the line for Kalani Sitake? Let's say they win three games this year. Does he still have a job? I mean, you just fired Ty Detmer. Completely, rearranged your coaching staff.
I don't think you can count on keeping your job if you win three games.
If Kalani Sitake does not go to a bowl, there's going to be people calling for his head. And this schedule is incredibly difficult. But let's tell the truth about where BYU is. BYU is a program that is playing a schedule that I think is representative of who they want to be. It's not representative of who they are. And some of this is on Tom Holmoe. Sure, Tom made the schedule, and I think he's done, I think he's worked miracles putting this schedule together for BYU.
Yeah.
But I think Tom has also taken now the reins off of Kalani Sitake. He did not give him full control of his coaching staff. That was a mistake. And I think Tom has rectified that. I think now you have to almost hit the reset button on Kalani Sitake and see what happens. Strength and conditioning have to improve. They're changing the morning practice times. Like, they're doing all of these things that Kalani wants to do. Maybe now this is his program. Their recruiting is decent. It's not great, but it's not awful. It's decent. If he doesn't go to a bowl, I don't think you can fire him this year. Now, if you have another repeat of last year, because last year, let's be honest, last season was a complete disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, getting blown out by LSU was not how you wanted to start. You didn't win another game after Portland. You didn't win another game until San Jose State on October 28th. I mean, that last year is forgettable. And I mentioned Wisconsin. That game was at Lavelle, and you got handled at home.
Yeah.
And attendance suffered, and morale suffered. And how many times did we wind up talking about how bad Ty Detmer is as an offensive coordinator? I don't know if that's true or not. But I know that when you're playing LSU, Utah, they lost again to Utah. You're playing Wisconsin at Utah State where you get torched. Boise, you lost badly. Mississippi State, you lost badly. East Carolina, you lost badly. San Jose State, you trounced them. You lost to Fresno State in a close game, relatively close game. That was on the road, right? UNLV, you won that game. You lost to UMass at home, right? Like, I mean, these losses are horrendous. You can't have that again this year. I think if you want to sell the general population on the fact that BYU is a football institution,
right,
you have to at least see, like, because remember what happened when Kalani got hired. Oh, time to compete with Utah. Oh, we just won the recruiting wars. And it just hasn't gone down that way. Now, I'm not saying that Utah's had unparalleled success in that time. But if we're going to really judge BYU on what they do in the games they play, they've got to find a way to beat Utah. That is a huge freaking problem for this football team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my biggest question is, what would people have them do? What would you have BYU do?
Win.
Yeah, okay, well, that's fine and dandy. But if you're winning against nobody State, it doesn't matter.
There's a lot of things that have to change here, right? And I think Kalani knows this. Strength and conditioning, I believe, is a big deal, right? Morning practice, I think, is a big deal. We talked about that on the show a month ago or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Morning practice is a big deal. Recruiting is a big deal. Development is a big deal. He's winning recruiting battles. There are kids that are getting offers from, and I'm not talking about competing in state even. They're winning recruiting battles across the country. That's just massive. That has to continue, but it's great that you're getting recruits. Now they have to develop them. And that's why I say strength and conditioning, positional excellence has to be emphasized. And I think that's what they're doing. And from, you know, just what everybody is saying about spring football, Greg Wrubell, and sure, Greg's probably colored a little blue here, but Greg is talking about how there is precision and how there's attention to the minutest detail in spring practice.
Yeah.
Well, that should be the baseline, right? But it always hasn't been. So I think you're in a position now where you have to do everything that you can do to be a massive football program. And I think they're doing that. So my answer is no, they shouldn't schedule down. No, expectations are not too high.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just think for me, I would just say, number one, I think I agree with you. You can't soften your schedule because you're not executing behind the scenes. That you just can't do that. That's not an option. Number two, I agree that they're doing really well in recruiting, but like what you said, if you can recruit these guys and win those battles, but if you don't develop them and they don't turn into key contributors for your football team, then what does it really matter? And so that's why I say they got to execute behind the scenes. And I think if they do that, they'll be fine. I don't know. You can't win three games in any program and stick around long term.
Robbie Haskell on Twitter, Hasro24, says BYU will have an easier transition into a P5 if they get invited than Utah and TCU had. Utah, I think, is a great case study for going into the Pac-12 when they did. It took 5 years. It took a long time. It took a lot of talk in 2013, 2014 about firing Kyle Whittingham, and there was a lot of consternation. Now, I think a lot of that's been put away because I think that program is solid. But transitioning to a big conference, Big 12 in BYU's case, let's say, I think that's the right avenue to be approaching with football. I'm not a Mountain West believer. There's a lot of people who say, hey, they should go back to the Mountain West. I'm not a believer in that. Yeah. Craig Thompson doesn't like or respect BYU. I think he's made that clear in the last 5 years. So I think stepping back, and by the way, what happens with ESPN? Because I think this is a huge deal as well. What happens with ESPN? Does that deal get renewed? If you join the Mountain West, is BYU still attractive to ESPN? What do you do with the schedule? If you join the Mountain West, what do you do with the schedule? Tom Holmes busted his ass to really build a very, very, very good schedule.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to give that up for the Mountain West. I think there's a lot of reason to believe that BYU as an athletic program on the whole should join the Mountain West with everything but football. Remain an independent in football because I don't think you really gain anything by joining the Mountain West. I don't. You need to play better football. You need to coach better football. You need to recruit better talent. You need to develop talent. It's not a matter of, you know, like a guy on Twitter was riding me about the honor code. And it's like, dude, this had nothing to do with the honor code.
Yeah, that's an easy out for like I said at the beginning of this conversation, I think it's easy to agree with public perception that they need to schedule down and they're just simply not capable of producing the same quality of football that other major universities are capable of. And I think that's not true. Yeah. I think they are capable of putting that on the field. They just haven't been. So I think I agree with you. Kalani's got to develop guys. They need to work on that strength and conditioning program. And if you do that, you should be able to win some games.
By the way, I also think Kalani has to develop. I think this is a guy who I think got a slap in the face. I think a lot of people believed that Kalani Sitake would have an easy road.
Mm-hmm.
That this guy, he was at Utah and Oregon State and Gary and Kyle and everybody was supporting him and look at his defenses. And I think the grass always looks lush and green until you walk into it and you look up close. And I think Kalani Sitake had a rude awakening. And I don't know how you fix what ails BYU quickly, because I don't know that there is a quick fix. BYU has been remarkably patient, whether that's basketball mediocrity, which I still think is a huge issue, by the way.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have a huge conference conversation if Gonzaga leaves the WCC. I think you had some lean years during Broncos' time. I think you just need to be patient. You need to, I hope that the administration, I hope Tom Homo wears a little bit of the issues over the last 2 years. I hope he wears some of that. And then I hope he gives Kalani Sitake that reset button that he deserved.
Yeah.
And now let's judge Kalani going forward. I know that's probably a cop out or the easy answer.
I think it's tough. I think that's such a that's such a personal decision. You know, if based on the surface, it would be easy to say, well, Kalani hasn't gotten the job done. But I also think Kalani hasn't had 100% outright control of every decision made in the program. And so when that's not the case, you know, it's hard to say, okay, well, it's Kalani's fault. Now that he's got pretty much all the control, I think I agree with you. I think now he's got to be held accountable.
Well, and I think you also have to not forget that BYU academically, forget the honor code and the culture, and academically, BYU's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing we talked about last time we talked about this, Mitch Harper wrote the same thing that I said, that Kalani Sitake's not winning the junior college battle. And a lot of that is because it's very difficult to get JC transfers admitted to BYU.
Yeah.
And they're passing the NCAA. They're meeting the requirement. But just because you're eligible to play college football by NCAA standards certainly doesn't mean you're eligible to play college football at BYU by BYU standards.
Yeah.
So I think there's some of that as well. All of this to say, I think Schlabaugh's got a lot of really good points. This schedule is very difficult. But you knew what you were doing. You made this bed. Now you have to get comfortable and you got to sleep well in it. And to do that, I think you have to do things better.
Yeah.
That much is very clear to me. So, no, I wouldn't, just to be clear, I would not schedule down.
No, I totally agree with everything you're saying. I think scheduling down just, it hurts you on many fronts. Recruiting, you know, on the surface fandom. I mean, there's just so many different points you could go to about scheduling down that it's not a good idea. I like that they have a strong schedule. I'd rather them fail chasing a great schedule than be, you know, 100-0 on a very weak schedule.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Let's talk a little Mark Cuban and other various NBA topics. I'm very interested in the latest developments on Mark Cuban. And if you don't know what's going on with the Dallas Mavericks, this is a nasty, gnarly situation, mainly because they have allowed their culture at the Dallas Mavericks to become something of a sex show, not even being spectacular or overreaching. The Dallas Mavericks had a hostile work environment scandal. They had a writer for their Mavs.com site that was twice convicted of domestic violence. They had a longtime employee openly watching pornography. And Mark Cuban came out and said, I knew nothing about this. And he made a bunch of very public comments about how he was going to change the culture there. And he fired his human resource director, the main guy, the president of the Dallas Mavericks, who's a very well-respected guy up until now, had left to go to Under Armour. He was fired 2 months into his stay at Under Armour for the same kind of behavior. So all this had happened. And meanwhile, some of the people who had endured this terrible environment at the Dallas Mavericks were paying attention to what Cuban was saying. And it really bothered them. They felt like he wasn't being honest and he wasn't taking accountability. So now more stories have come forward about the boorish, I think borderline criminal activity that was taking place inside the Dallas Mavericks office. I mean, you have stories again about open consumption of pornography. There's a story going around the Dallas Mavericks office about how there was a used condom outside of the bathroom, and that nobody picked it up until it sat there for a while. And eventually an executive had to go and get it with a paper towel. And Mark Cuban is talking about how he is a hands-on owner and this is his business. Yeah. And he built it. And he apparently was never there. And the question is, did he know? And people are saying, well, it doesn't matter if he knew. He created this environment. And one of the big complaints is that the building that they were in was a warehouse. And the walls in this building didn't go all the way to the ceiling. So anytime you were being talked to by a supervisor, everybody heard the conversation.
Yep.
And one person in particular was a yeller and a screamer, this one guy. And he was yelling and screaming at people about their performance. And so just all of this stuff. But more nasty, awful details come out. And I just read all this and I say to myself, why is Mark Cuban still allowed to run the Mavericks? Because either Mark Cuban knew and is complicit and responsible for what happened, or Mark Cuban didn't know and had no control of his organization and is complicit and responsible for what happened. But I want to know where the NBA is on this. My simple question is, should Mark Cuban be suspended until they do whatever kind of investigation they're going to do?
I think he should be suspended. I think he should not be allowed in the building. It's that simple. He should not be allowed on the premise. I think you know, the NBA needs to, and again, I swear I talk about this like 3-4 times a week, but the NBA needs to get out in front of this and say, look, you're suspended for as long as it takes us to do this investigation and get to the bottom of whether you knew, get to the bottom of what actually factually backed up happened.
Why didn't you know?
Why didn't you know if he didn't know? You know, like, so they just need to get to the bottom of the entire situation, get their heads wrapped around what actually happened here, let all the, you know, the people who suffered from that environment vent and talk about it. And then they need to come to a conclusion on what should happen with Mark Cuban. My initial feeling before any of this is solved and understood is that he shouldn't be allowed to own the Mavericks anymore. I mean, this kind of situation in today's
world.
So
he's guilty.
Well, yeah,
without investigation,
you're auto guilty. If something like this happens and you own an organization and it's happening inside the organization, unless there is substantial proof that you didn't know, like you've got X, Y, and Z,
sure,
how you would not know, you're guilty, man. It's just like anything else.
I think you have to let an investigation play out. The problem is the NBA really hasn't said much about this.
I just mean the public eye, to be specific. In the public eye, he's guilty.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And for sure. I think if you're the NBA, I agree with you. If you're the NBA, you have to be level-headed here, and you have to at least
but
try to
But don't you have
say,
to do something other than nothing? Because the NBA really has not done much about this, which is also an issue. The Mavericks hired somebody from outside the organization to be their new president, and they're investigating what happened. And it's like, okay, well, you're doing an internal investigation. Is that person really going to be comfortable enough to say, yeah, Mark Cuban was completely reckless and out of control and wasn't minding the shop? Yeah, we should really severely penalize him.
Yeah. No, they're not.
They're not.
They're not.
They're not. That's their boss. That's their paycheck. So I seriously doubt that anything is going to come of this. And I think it's a complete travesty. I think it's terrible.
I just think there's a lot of hypocrisy. You know, in the NBA, I mean, you're getting upset when guys are courting LeBron James to their team before they're allowed to, but you're not going after essentially a sexual harassment environment. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. Somebody's consuming pornography in an open office in a warehouse. There's, you know, a used condom outside the bathroom. So really, this is a sexually charged environment, and obviously that's not what it should be.
Yeah.
And so I just think there's a lot of hypocrisy in the NBA right now, and I think Adam Silver needs to come out and take a very strong stance.
But
say,
will he?
I don't know. I guess I don't. I guess there hasn't been enough issues for us to go off of to know what to expect from Adam Silver at this point. And I guess that's a good problem to have if you're the NBA. But you can't do nothing. You can't pull an NFL.
I agree.
Because that's what the NFL does. That's why the NFL is such a bad name. They say nothing, and then they come out when it's convenient and take a stance after, you know, it looks bad. Like, they don't handle these kind of situations very well.
Yeah.
And so I think if you're any professional, if you're, you know, any of the core four major sports in our country, you got to take a stance on stuff like this. It's that simple.
I just don't understand how you kept a guy who was twice convicted of domestic violence.
Yeah.
Once against one of your own employees. Amazing. Hey, let's talk about Lonzo Ball and the Lakers, because Lonzo last night was horrendous, like terrible offensively. The Lakers lost to the Pelicans 128-125 and had probably 10 possessions to win that game. Lonzo Ball was 2 of 15 from the floor and shot 1 of 12 from 3.
Miserable.
Wait, no. He was 2 of 15 from the floor and shot 1 of 12 from 3.
So 3 baskets all night.
1 of 12 from 3. Now, I give him credit, because when you're 1 of 12, that means you kept shooting even though you didn't think it was going in. I give him a lot of credit for that. Does Lonzo Ball ever develop into that next Magic Johnson that that's what they call him? Magic has said he'll be better than me. Does Lonzo ever develop into that? Because what do we know about him, Jake? One, he's a great defender.
Mm-hmm.
He works hard. He runs hard. He gets to the basket well, and he's an excellent passer.
Look, he does everything well except shoot the ball. I mean, the guy can really pass. He runs. Is that important? You know what I mean? Like, it's not. For the Lakers, I think there's less emphasis on Lonzo to be a great shooter than there are on someone like a Kyle Kuzma. But I think for them to be successful long term, he's going to have to make shots. If he's going to be the guy, if he's going to be the next Magic Johnson, he's got to be able to shoot. And I think for that to happen, I think Lonzo's got to make that choice and say, look, if I want to get to the next level as a player, I got to change these mechanics. Yeah. They've been the mechanics I've had my whole life, but they're not good enough for the NBA.
Lonzo Ball has a lot of talent.
He does.
He's not a gifted shooter, and he's going to have to really work hard on this.
But I don't think we know if he's a gifted shooter or not because his mechanics are terrible. If he had good mechanics, would he be considered a gifted
shooter? But see, I just go on what I see. And you can't go on what he could be because potential never won anybody a game, right? You have to go on what you know about guys. And what do we know about Lonzo Ball? He's a terrible shooter.
Right.
That's why I say that. This is Markelle Fultz, but playing.
But what is Fultz doing?
Trying to re-engineer his shot. And
it's working.
But see, I don't think the Lakers are in that position. I don't think the Lakers are in that position.
What position is that?
Where they need to show development. They're in a very precarious position because they're trying to sign two superstars next summer. And they need to show development. And by the way, I don't think Kyle Kuzma and Julius Randle are as good as they are right now without Lonzo Ball. Because we also got to look inside of Isaiah Thomas, and he's terrible for this team. I mean, like, Isaiah just does not pass. Does ever. Like, Isaiah Thomas never passes.
Well, they're a different team with Isaiah Thomas on the floor, and I think the dynamic between Isaiah Thomas and Lonzo Ball is the word is not awkward, but they just don't have a good relationship on the floor. Lonzo tends to give it up to Isaiah Thomas, which I don't know that I totally agree with. I think Lonzo Ball should be the guy until he needs to sit due to foul trouble or because he's too tired. I mean, literally, Isaiah Thomas should not play in favor of Lonzo Ball. I don't understand it.
Luke Walton did something last night for the first time where I said to myself, dude, what are you doing? He played three guards. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Lonzo Ball, and Isaiah Thomas together. And it reduced Lonzo Ball to a guy who just ran up and down the sideline. That's what he did. He ran corner to corner for about a 3 to 4 minute stretch and was irrelevant in the game. And that's the problem with Isaiah Thomas, because when Isaiah Thomas gets the ball, it doesn't come out. He shoots it.
Yeah.
He makes a lot of shots, but I think he really stunts the growth of everybody on that team. And he's not a long-term guy. Caldwell Pope, I'm good with it, because Kentavious is going to be a Laker for probably the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, he can absolutely shoot the three. He can get to the basket, and he works hard.
Yeah, I mean, on any other team, he's a great role player or sixth man.
Yeah, that's exactly what he'll be. Because if you bring in two stars on this team, if you bring in a LeBron, if you bring in a Paul George, and you add that to Kuzma, Randle, and Lonzo Ball, now you're a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to add some depth on the bench, which they're going to have the cap space to do that. But I'm just curious if Lonzo Ball can change his shot this summer. And I say that because LeVar Ball, I don't think, is going to be the best influence on that kid. We already know he's going to Lithuania to do a rap concert. We know he's cutting a rap album. We know all of that. Lonzo Ball works hard. We see him routinely after practice. He's one of the last guys at practice, and he shoots a ton. I just don't know that LeVar Ball is the influence that he needs. He needs an agent and a trainer who are going to get on him. He needs a DJ Spackman. He needs a basketball guy to say, dude, we got to fix this. Do you think that happens?
I can't say with outright confidence that it does happen. I mean, I would go as far as to say that I doubt that it happens. I think Lonzo.
You doubt it happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lonzo thinks he's good enough right now, and I think it'll take.
Oh no, he doesn't. No. If you follow Lonzo, like watching him on social media, it's very clear he doesn't. He took that loss personally last night.
As he should have. He was pathetic.
He shot really pathetically, but he had a big influence on that game. The problem was the Pelicans were not guarding him at the line. They let him shoot threes, and he missed 11 of 12. And the Lakers paid for that dearly. I think he knows that because it's very clear. He put up a post, and I don't remember what it said, but it said something to the effect of, that, you know, pressure sharpens diamonds. It creates diamonds, right? And all of his teammates are on that post saying, hey, keep shooting them. And, like, there's a ton of people supporting him.
I'm not saying he's not favored in the locker room and people aren't supporting him.
No, he's – but what I'm telling you is he's taking these 1-for-12 performances that are very common for him, and he's struggling with that. And it's hurting him.
Well, okay.
As it should.
As it should. And again, I'm not trying to be harsh about this, but he can take those personally. But what are you going to do to change it? Why are you not working on that already?
He is, but you can't change your shot mechanics in the middle of a season. You don't have – I think there's a common misperception that NBA teams practice all the time. They practice maybe once a week if
right,
they're lucky.
But he's getting thousands of shots in shoot around in one practice a
correct.
Week.
But
I mean, the
you,
guy's
in
got
that
opportunity.
Time, but in that, you can't change your shot during the season. In that time, you are trying to perfect what you do now. You in the summer, that's when you change your shot mechanics. That's when instead of shooting off the left side of your face, you bring it in front of your face. But that takes dedication. Thousands of shots a day is what that takes.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have that kind of time because, plain and simply put, you have to produce or you do not play. That's why I'm telling you, the Lakers don't necessarily need him to shoot 25% from three. He can't keep shooting 1-of-12 because at some point that wears on your teammates. At some point. I don't know when that is because it's clearly not now.
Look, I just think for a team that's not a playoff team, for a team that's supposed to be almost done with the losing part of their rebuilding, essentially, for a team that's going to go out and sign LeBron James and Paul George, how much worse can it get for Lonzo Ball shooting? What negativity is going to come from him starting to work on it already?
I'm not telling you you're wrong.
Okay,
he
doesn't have
time. I think
you
don't get it. I think you don't understand that the NBA schedules do not permit you to take thousands of shots a day.
I'm not saying he's got to take thousands of shots a day. What I'm saying is that he's got you referred to his social media. He's got time to commit to rap tours and to be in the studio making his rap video on Instagram and dancing with his boy. If you wanted to be that good, if you wanted to take the next step, you would take any extra time you had and you would be in the gym. And then when you're not in the gym because you've already been in the gym, you would be recovering and you would come up with a schedule that's built by a trainer to improve your shot.
Which
and
is what
your
you
game.
Do in the summer. You can't do that. I think you have an unrealistic view.
So what's going to happen when he comes back from summer and his shot's not changed?
I don't know because I don't think that's going to happen. I think Lonzo Ball truly wants to be a superstar, and I think Lonzo Ball is embarrassed. He's never failed at basketball before. Remember that.
But he's never played anybody who's better than him before either.
Well, UCLA. He was nails at UCLA, but now the ball's not going in, and it's because there's a hell of a lot more pressure in the NBA than there is in college. I think he will, and I think that pressure will push out a diamond. I think he's going to work hard, and I think he's going to try and change his shot in the summer. But you're crazy if you think guys have time to mess with their mechanics.
I'm not saying he's going to revamp his entire shot during the course of the season, but what I am saying is if you've got time to mess around in a rap studio, you've got time to improve your game.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I also think that's a bit unfair. I mean, is the guy supposed to be in the gym or in bed? That's it? No.
Yeah, well...
No, he's not. That's because that produces.
Well, listen, I'm just telling you, if this guy gets 5 years from now and he's still got these shot mechanics, that's the Lakers' fault, and it's partially on Lonzo.
You're anti Lonzo then? Because
I'm anti not being realistic with where they're at as a team. They're not a playoff team right now. What you're doing is you're wasting time with Isaiah Thomas because he's not going to be here and he's not a fit on this team. So, number one, Isaiah Thomas is taking minutes away from Lonzo. We see it almost every night.
It's not like he's playing 15 minutes a night, I think, or something like that. What's his name?
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas, I think, is playing 15 minutes a night. I think your expectations are skewed when it comes to the Lakers.
Well, maybe
the Lakers
I'm happy
know.
To be wrong here. I'm open to the idea that I'm wrong. But what I'm saying is you can stick with that now. But if he's not a changed shooter with those mechanics – there's a big-time problem. And that those cute quotes about pressure and diamonds are nice right now because he doesn't have the time. He's got an excuse not to work on his shot. And I understand that. I get it. He doesn't have time. But this summer, we better see him going to, you know, to those gyms out in Timbuktu and working on his shot. And you know, he needs to get better.
And I think he will. By the way, I was wrong. Isaiah Thomas averages about between 26 and 30 minutes a night. Okay. So he is playing a significant amount of time.
Which I just don't understand. And I get that I've been negative about this conversation. I don't have tolerance for guys who have time to go out and fool around and start a rap career like every other NBA guy has tried to do, yet you're not, your shot's not developing. And in my opinion, there's a lot of times, and we talked about this, where he's a nobody on the floor because of the other guys around him. And that's got to change at some point if he's going to be the guy.
Well, we'll see. It'll be fascinating to watch. I do think that he will step up, and I do think he will change his shot. Real quick, Kyrie Irving's going to have knee surgery,
mm-hmm.
and I think this is an incredibly, incredibly important conversation.
Yeah,
because there is the thing that comes to mind now is that look, man, it's March 23rd. They're the number two team in the East, and that's not changing, right? Because they're six games ahead of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Right.
I don't know how – I don't know that – can he play in the – will he play in the postseason? Right now, they'd be playing the Miami Heat if the playoffs started today. Are they better than the Miami Heat without Kyrie Irving?
I think it's close.
I think it's very close. And I think it's close – because they're better defensively, because I don't think they're better offensively without Kyrie than Miami.
Well, I think it's just a different brand of basketball when you're not playing. I mean, it's what we've seen in Cleveland this year, right? Everybody thought, oh, well, they're getting Isaiah Thomas, and he lit it up, and the Celtics are getting Kyrie. This is a fair trade, right?
Yeah.
No, that's wrong. Yeah. It's a different brand of basketball without Kyrie Irving because of his influence on the game. So for me, with the position that they're in, being as injured as they are, you know, obviously Hayward, now Kyrie – were you really at this point? They're not the favorites to get out of the East and go to the finals, obviously. So
I think they'd be third and frankly fourth. I would put Philadelphia ahead of Boston right now.
And so, in my opinion, why would he rush back? This is kind of what we were saying about Gordon Hayward before, when it was still unclear if he was going to be able to get back or not, yeah. And maybe he could help in the playoff push. I don't know why you would rush your guys back when you can just hang out with them and come back next year and be ready to go.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, Kyrie Irving is in my opinion, a once-in-a-generation talent. I mean, when's the last time we saw a guy like that in the league with that kind of handle, that kind of finish around the rim?
Yeah, not recently.
We haven't seen that in a long time, and I can't think of another guy who's had a skill set as close to Kyrie. So,
well, Kyrie Irving's a generational talent. There's no doubt about that. That guy's a once-in-a-generation kind of talent. Yeah. They don't come along very often. But I just thought it was interesting. Now he's having knee surgery, so they kind of have accepted their fate as the number two team in the East. And it'll be interesting to see if it is Miami.
But
can Miami catch Washington, and that bumps Washington down to the seven without John Wall right now?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of questions there. I still think everybody's trying to avoid the Bucks. If I'm Toronto, I'm not exactly thrilled that the Bucks are in the eighth spot. Because if that team ever figures it out, Antetokounmpo and Bledsoe, and I mean, they have enough talent to make your life very difficult.
It's going to be a deep series. There's no question about that.
I think
the Bucks are a classic case of should have done better. Expectations were, you know, pretty low at the outset of the season with Jason Kidd, and I think, you know, they made that change, and we thought, well, maybe they'll be a fifth seed, maybe they'll even get to a fourth seed. Who really knows,
yeah.
Right? And then that just hasn't happened. They haven't been good, and so I agree with you. Tokounmpo is there, and I think Antetokounmpo. They have enough talent to be a pain in your side, and that often in the NBA turns into a losing series for a team like the Raptors.
Yeah, Bucks and Bulls tonight, by the way, in Chicago. That's an interesting game. There's some games this weekend that are real testers. Houston, New Orleans is tomorrow. That game is fascinating to me. I mean. There's a lot of games. That Philly-Minnesota game tomorrow is really important. I think Philadelphia I'm not saying they're slowing down, but they're not as dominant as they had been. So
they don't have the momentum that they had. And I think this is where the length of the NBA season gets young teams.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Sixers are young. There's no question about that. And I think now they're finally starting to see some return on the investment in these young guys. But the season is so long that I think the young guys get tired mentally. And I'm not saying they're quitting. I'm just saying that they get tired mentally, so there are more turnovers. There's more.
Oh, totally.
You know, there's more turnovers. There's more, you know, silly little fouls that they probably shouldn't have made. It's the, you know what that is? You know what I'm referring to? It's the Raptors play from the game the other night where they didn't foul
against
on
the Cavs.
Time, against the Cavs. Yeah. It's like it's those little mistakes that happen towards the end of the year that you just can't predict. And so I think for the Sixers, they've lost their momentum. And it is what it is.
Jazz Spurs tonight. Any surprise that Tony Parker essentially criticized Kawhi Leonard, saying that Tony Parker said that Tony Parker's quad injury was 100 times worse than Kawhi Leonard's?
I mean, Tony Parker's one of the few guys on that team that can say something like that, and, you know, all hell won't break loose. But I don't. The whole Kawhi thing is fascinating to me because I think the Kawhi injury in the seriousness of that is similar to Kyrie's knee thing. Kyrie's been nursing this knee for most of the year, and he's played through it, and I give him props for that. Kawhi Leonard is played 9 games after the injury, essentially, and now is sitting out. And in my opinion, my gut tells me that he's actually healthy, but for some reason there's a rift between him and the front office. I think him and the players.
How is that possible?
Him and the players are good, in my opinion, because if they weren't good, it wouldn't just be Tony Parker saying things, and Danny Green wouldn't have denied the accusation that they had a players only meeting to roast Kawhi Leonard. You know, I think they're as
and
a
he
group,
went head to Danny Green went head to head with a Woj bomb, like,
which is impressive. That's saying something.
That's,
you know? So that's what I say. I think
that's not
I
good
think
for
as
business.
A unit in the locker room, they're fine, right? Like they're fine as a team with the players, but there's something that happened when this injury first occurred that clearly has divided Kawhi Leonard from the front office, and I think he's sitting despite them. And my feeling is this all started when there was that whole conversation and that whole dilemma about Kawhi Leonard not trusting the medical staff of the organization. I'm telling you, that is the root of the problem. And I don't know where that started or how it's even possible that that kind of a problem starts.
No idea.
But they're in this situation now, and we kind of talked about this yesterday. They need to have a sit-down, and it needs to be productive.
With their most important and probably their best player.
Dude, Kawhi Leonard could be an 18- to 20-year guy on one organization, and he could carry you for that entire time.
Apparently, he's not. Apparently, he's not.
Well,
you know?
I will be fascinated to hear this offseason if the issue sees the light of day, if the public finds out what the problem here is.
Yeah, interesting. Hey, before we get out of here, let's talk YouTube banning gun videos. I'm fascinated by this story. And I'm not fascinated because it's the gun debate. I'm fascinated as to why they ban them. My theory on YouTube is, and if you didn't hear this, YouTube essentially banned any educational gun video. You cannot do a how-to gun video, how to build them, mm-hmm. how to shoot them, how to put a bump stock on, how to any of that. You cannot sell guns. You cannot anything about guns.
No, they're taking a stance very clearly.
But why are they taking that stance? Google/YouTube. You know why? Because their core users are millennials and Gen Zers. And who's leading the battle against gun violence in this country
students.
Right now? Young people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's exactly why YouTube did this. And I think it is the absolute right thing to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I now, having said that, should YouTube have banned gun videos? Should they have banned gun videos?
I think that they, yeah, I should they, could they did. And I like that they did. They got out in front of the problem or the issue. And I love when people do that. And I just talked about this 10 minutes ago, that this is what the math should be doing. But at the same time, I just think YouTube taking a stance says, hey, here's how we feel about this. And actually, this is what Dick's Sporting Goods did too. And I really like that Dick's did that because that was a huge risk for them sales-wise and viability-wise long-term. It's a massive risk in a day and age when retail is going out of business, essentially. So I like that YouTube did it.
I think so too. As a guy who believes that we have a problem with guns in this country, I believe that. I'm not all in favor of this. I think YouTube needs to have a certification program. There's a lot of things that I would change about YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't mind they did this. I do mind that now all the gun videos are just simply being uploaded to a site that's got more views than YouTube, depending on who you believe.
Mm-hmm.
Pornhub.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know Pornhub real well because I also believe that pornography is the great destroyer of men.
Yeah.
But Pornhub is a site that essentially is all about porn, pornography.
Yeah, so I was reading about this before the show, and essentially
research. Pornhub, you were just doing research.
Yeah, Pornhub as a company is a conglomerate of three different pornographic sites, and so Pornhub itself is actually apparently is the biggest resource for that type of content. And so it's interesting to me that now they're allowing guns on their website. I don't know enough about how that whole situation works to really speak to it. But it is kind of fascinating that essentially they're picking up someone else's garbage. I mean, that's really what they're doing.
I'm fascinated by it. Why do we mix? And I'm not trying to get on my moral high horse here, but why
Uncle
do we,
Monty?
Uncle Monty wants to know, why do we mix sex and violence? Why do we mix sex and disrespect? Why do we need that? What is it about us as men? And I think, I'm not going to say this is uniquely a man thing, but pornography has destroyed men for generations.
Yeah.
Sex, affairs. Look at the Donald Trump situation with porn stars and a Playboy playmate and affairs and the Kennedys, the Clintons. I mean, it's endless. Why do we as men constantly fall at the foot of sex? I don't know. But we also have this odd fascination with guns, right? So you put those two together, it makes perfect sense. It absolutely makes perfect sense. This is nothing more than Amazon branding themselves. This is nothing more than Pornhub saying, hey, YouTube doesn't want you. This is what we do. Come on over.
Right.
Because gun videos and porn videos probably should be right next to each other. Because as guys, I mean...
I hesitate to say that. I think how-to videos, I get it. Right now, they're not looked upon positively. But
right,
I think it depends how you're viewing that.
But when
that
you
video.
Say how-to gun videos,
yeah.
How to make your rifle fully automatic.
Yeah.
How to make any gun fully automatic instead
like
of semi-automatic.
Just like any other how-to video. You know,
yeah, how to create...
How to sweep the floor. It's just like anything else. But I think it depends how the viewer... For what purpose are you watching the video? Are you watching it to go shoot a bunch of people, or are you watching it so you can be a better hunter? I don't know. There's no way to control that. And I think in this day and age, now we're at a point where, you know, I don't know the exact count of shootings this year now. It's like 30 in the 30s and 40s now, whatever it is.
38 or 39.
In this time, we're having so many shootings. This stuff is no longer welcome just anywhere.
In the mainstream. I'm telling you. That gun violence, we're headed for a change. This march tomorrow, for those of you who don't know, there's huge marches planned tomorrow, mainly in D.C., you know, to talk about gun violence. And we're headed for a major deal on gun violence. Whether that's good or not, are they coming to get the guns? I don't know. I'm a gun owner. I'm a registered gun owner. I have a concealed carry permit. I'd like to think I'm a responsible gun owner. I hope I don't lose my guns over that. But what I know is we got to do something other than we're doing, because right now gun violence in this country is way out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Like, way out of control. Anyway, find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Have yourself an awesome weekend, and make sure you subscribe to this podcast on SoundCloud, on iTunes. Those are both The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And, of course, you can always watch our live stream on Twitter every single day, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.